From the bayous in Louisiana to the timber country up north, you'll find them out on the trap line chasing furs to put up on the board. Mixing up another batch of that magical stuff, chilling around the fire after the show. Hey, it's Sarah and Jeff, and maybe a guest on the Trappin' Radio.
Welcome to Trapping Radio this week. We do not have an interview planned this week, but we have a few really good topics to talk about, I think, that are very relevant to trapping season being open and the current conditions of trapping. So I have with me Tommy Bryant. Welcome, Tommy. Thanks for joining me tonight.
I appreciate you having me.
Yeah. So I just thought maybe tonight we could talk a little bit about weather fronts moving in, maybe some dispersal that kind of your thoughts on dispersal and kind of what you're seeing there where you are, and talk a little bit about that and maybe just kind of how that affects catch rates and things like that. So that's kind of what I had in mind for tonight, if that sounds good.
But we got dispersal, weather movement, and moon phase.
Yes.
Okay. All right. I guess, you know, I get these questions as well. A lot of people send me stuff through Messenger, text message, Facebook, different forms of social media. This can be a difficult time of year for some people. It's, you know, if you were trapping a month ago in a lot of areas, the dispersal really hadn't started yet. A lot of areas, is the shuffle's going on right now. And for those who don't understand dispersal or know what I'm talking about, it's when the family groups at the end of the summer, going into fall and winter, when they start separating, they're out, kind of filling out the territory, finding boundaries, finding new territory, maybe filling in some holes where some canines or predators have been removed from a certain area. They might be filtering in those spots. So it can be a great time this time of year once that dispersal hits. The biggest thing that I've noticed this time of year is to really figure out where you're highways, your main highways, those are dispersal routes. Young coyotes and coyotes looking for new territories tend to follow them because there's a lot of food on the interstate. You know, cars hitting deer, especially this time of year. So it's a lot to snack on as they're moving and trying to find new territory. Rivers go right along with the interstates and major highways. Rivers are barriers. They kind of run to them and then they just follow them. Train tracks can be the same. Excuse me. Train tracks, cities. I'm sorry.
So when we're, what is the family unit? Like, when you say dispersal, who is part of that family at this point? Is it mom, dad, and how many pups, or kind of?
Well, typically this time of year, it's not the mom and dad. Typically this time of year, it's the pups. A lot of the males, younger males will be kicked out this time of year. Some of the females as well, depending on how big the family group is, how much food access there is, how much area it is to expand into. All those things are different key factors in, you know, the dispersal. But a lot of it's just pups, pups moving into new areas, kind of like adults, you know, when you start getting kids that are 18, 19, 20, they start leaving from home for longer periods of time, finding new homes, things like that. It's the same way with pups in the fall. Mm-hmm. But but yeah, so, you know, they'll move, and cities are the same thing. Outside of cities, when you get it's a barrier. It's something that they're not going to penetrate into it, just like the highways, their rivers, you know, they're not going to really cross. They might cross a river, but typically they're going to hit them and stop. Same thing with cities, same thing with railroads, same way with interstates and things like that as well. So those are dispersal routes per se, but you know, you can take somebody who's trapping in August or September, and when you go into an area, you're trapping that family unit where it's at. It's not really moving anywhere. It's in that core area. Once you catch those out, you're done. You can catch them really quick in August and September, but you don't have anything filtered back in. So a lot of times you go in 3 or 4 days, you see all your action, and then it just goes dead. It's just because there's nothing else there, and there's nothing else moving in. If you find really good dispersal routes this time of year, you can have a lot of traffic, and you can stay on a spot sometimes. Well, I know people that can stay on spots for months, but typically where I'm at, it's a couple weeks, and you can still have filtered animals just kind of moving in. You know, you'll catch your original family group while you're there at the beginning, and then every couple of days, 2 or 3 days, you'll have a new arrival. You know, something else will move through and get caught just passing through the area, and those are what we call transients versus residents. So it's a lot of transient this time of year, moving, looking for new territory. So it can be a good time of year to trap with the dispersal going on. And that'll help you a lot, especially if our season come in October 1st here in where I'm at. And it was a major difference in the first 2 weeks of October than the last 2 weeks of October. It can change that quick. And the shuffle will continue to go as weather changes, as food changes. You know, dispersal can be triggered by a lot of things. It can be triggered by cooler weather, shorter daylight length, pups getting older, crop changes. When you go in and start harvesting a lot of beans, corn, milo, things like that, you start taking that out of the fields. That gives them less places to hide and hunt, so they move on to different food and stuff like that. So that's a part of dispersal as well. And in my area, you know, we're a dog hunting area. Our dog season come in October 18th. Them dogs in there running the deer, squirrels or whatever they're chasing, or just the amount of hunters being in the woods that time of year with the gun season coming in, those dogs will push those coyotes around, push them into new blocks, cause dispersal. Same way with the hunters going in and out of the woods. There's just a lot more activity out there in the wild where they're normally at, where they hadn't been bothered with all summer. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much what I have on dispersal. You know, you can get into different areas later season, earlier season. It kind of varies depending on where you're at. No different than anything, breeding seasons and things like that. They all change a little bit based on your area.
Mm-hmm. So when we're talking about, you know, the resident coyotes versus the transient coyotes, are there certain set locations that might differ from, let's say you have resident coyotes that maybe are in one spot versus the transient coyotes that are moving? Is there, I guess I'm trying, I don't know what I'm trying to say. Is there different set locations that you would pick in a farm that you know there's residents, or you know this is a good dispersal route?
Yeah, they're, you know, dispersal routes. I'm looking for farms that border some type of major structure like an interstate.
Okay.
You can go up and down the interstates and look for those farms. Now, resident type coyotes, if I'm trapping in the earlier part of the season, I'm looking for food source. I'm looking for denning areas, looking for food source, somewhere that holds the habitat to hold that coyote. I'm not necessarily looking for that when it comes to trapping a dispersal travel way. You know, you want a funnel from A to B. So you're looking, you know that there's, there might be a 1,000-acre cut over here, and it might be 3,000 acres of corn over there. Well, guess what? There might be a farm right up against the interstate that connects them to. And it might be a low, you know, drainage or whatever right up against it. It just kind of funnels everything from one to the other up against the interstate. So you don't necessarily have to trap the cutover or the cornfield. You can trap the little farm in between it and cover a lot of that for the dispersal. Mm-hmm. When I'm looking at resident type coyotes, I'm looking for food. I'm looking for cover because they're not going to travel far. They'll travel a little bit, you know, the later in the season, they'll get a little further away from their denning areas and stuff like that. But you can go in and you can find the sign. Whereas dispersal areas, I'm not necessarily looking for sign. I'm going in. I know it's a travel way. It's a connection point from A to B. I'm setting up on it and I'm making my own sign and I'm waiting for that animal. Resident type coyotes, I go in there, I find the sign, I set on the sign because I know they're going to be back in the next couple days. Typically, usually the first or second day, they'll be back if they're resident coyotes. Mm-hmm. I also kind of change the way I set when it comes to that. Resident coyotes, I might only go in and set a couple of traps, 2-3 traps, on a whole farm. Might be a 500-acre farm. And I know there's some coyotes in there. The neighbors call me and says he hears them every night in there. So I go in and I set 1 or 2 subtle sets. That coyote know that he lives in that area. He knows it like the back of his hand. I'm not going to go in there and set a pile of traps and blow him out of there because you're setting too many traps on resident type coyotes. Can cause you problems. They'll actually pack up and leave. They might come back in 3 or 4 weeks, but they'll leave while you're there. So I'll go in kind of subtle on that and set it up. When it comes to dispersal routes, I might set every good location on that dispersal farm. Even though I don't have any sign, I might set up all the good spots because those coyotes haven't been there or those foxes haven't been there. So when they're traveling through, you don't know how they're going to travel through. If it's a good spot, it's a good spot. So I set them all. So you might have a 500-acre farm with 8 to 10 traps on it for me because I'm dealing with a lot more coyotes. I've got bobcats and I'm dealing with fox, gray fox and red fox. All of them have different travel patterns throughout a property. So I'm targeting all of them. So I'll set all those key points on that travel way and try to pick them up when they come through. And because they're not there all the time, all those extra sets don't mean anything to them because they hadn't ran across them. They might be just going straight across that farm to somewhere else. And they might only pass by that one set that you had in the bottom of that drainage and he didn't go up to the high part of the field where you had another set or the very low path that goes down by the creek. He might not have went through there. He might have went right through the middle of the farm. And if you didn't have that certain spot set, then you may have missed your opportunity to catch that animal because he wasn't staying there. He was just passing through. Mm-hmm. So I'll set, that's the difference is when I set them up. I know there's, depends on really where you're at. I know if you're in red fox country where there's not a lot of coyotes or coyotes not worth anything or whatever, you're just trying to stay away from the coyote, you might typically set certain spots for red fox. Or if you're in coyote country and you don't have any fox, you might set those more open areas for coyote travel. Gray fox, you may want to stick in the thicket a little bit better because a lot of times, and there are some exceptions, but a lot of times you're just not going to catch a gray fox in the middle of a wide open 500-acre field. It will happen, but it's not normal. If you stay closer to cover, you can typically pick up your gray fox. I hear that a lot too when they're talking about trapping the three different species. They're like, well, we've got gray fox, but we don't ever catch them, or this and that. A lot of time it's how you're setting and where you're setting. If you get to some thicker cover, them secondary travel locations that a lot of time people overlook, they say, well, this is my primary, this is my secondary, I'm just going to set the primary and go. A lot of time that second or third location on that farm is where you're going to pick up some of your gray fox, some cats, things like that. So if you're targeting all three, I'd definitely set all the, find you a good dispersal route, find it up against the interstate or up against a river or wherever it may be, and set all the good locations. You know, if you got a field rolling down to a river, set the high bank trail. Maybe if it's a low bank, low trail on the bank somewhere, set that, and maybe go up in the edge of the field too and set something there too. So you can cover all three spots. Whereas if I was trapping just resident coyotes in that area, I may only set one of those three.
Sure. You touched a little bit on the gray fox and not putting it in, not putting the set in such open cover. Why is that? If, you know, if somebody's going after, you know, a gray fox like that, can you explain maybe why the wide open isn't a great place to catch a gray fox?
Gray fox, you know, he's got a lot of enemies. He is, coyotes don't like him. Matter of fact, there's some birds of prey that will feed on him, especially the younger ones. He's got a lot of stuff after him. He's hunting, he's part of the, I guess you would call it the cat family. I don't know how exactly that is set up, but, you know, he can climb a tree, you know, to get away from danger, whereas other canines can't. And he can move throughout the brush. He hunts a lot of stuff in the edge of the woods, things like that. Gray fox actually eat a lot of birds, things like that. So most of the time they're going to find them in the woods. Gray fox love cover. They love thick stuff. They're very similar to a bobcat in many aspects as far as where you're going to catch them. Whereas your red fox and your coyotes typically hang out in some of the more open areas or brush lines and things like that, where you can go into thick stuff like cutovers and timber and pine thickets and things like that. And you can find a lot of gray fox in there, because I've seen instances where gray fox actually slept up in a tree. You'd see them on a tree limb sleeping sometimes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they got a lot of places to hide and a lot of places to hunt at the same time. So they typically like to hang around that thicker stuff.
Sure.
And I've been into places where people tell me that we don't have any fox. We don't have any gray fox. And I can go down there and they're thinking coyote, and they'll catch a few red fox out in the open. They'll catch those coyotes out in the open. And they'll bypass those locations that they might pick up those grays on, and I can go into an area. I've been done it several times. If there are grays there, I can go in there and catch three or four or five grays off a farm. They're like, man, I didn't know we had any grays. And it's just because they wasn't setting for them. They were thinking coyote. And I have to actually train myself that too, because I get into coyote mode. I get the thinking coyote, and I forget to set those little smaller, tighter locations. I actually did that some while y'all were here and didn't set some spots that I thought about later. I was like, I need to go back and focus on those little tight spots and pick up those extra few gray fox that I might have overlooked when I was trying to run and gun and just go after coyotes. Mm-hmm. What was our next topic?
Next topic, one of two. You can decide where you want to go. I had the moon phase wrote down and weather patterns.
Let's go weather pattern. We'll save the good moon phase to all age debate for the end, but we'll go weather patterns on this one.
We've had a variety so far already this season, it seems like.
It's been up and down. It goes from 90 degree heat to 35 degree nights to rain to super dry with no rain for months at a time.
We've got snow coming next week.
Oh, like my goodness.
An inch of snow in Iowa next week.
Ooh,
snow flurries and 7 inches in Michigan. So we'll see what it becomes. But Yeah.
Oh, yeah. See, the good thing about where I'm at, we don't hardly get any snow. We'll get, I mean, we've had 5 or 6 snows in a season, in a year. Mm-hmm. But typically, they're the 1-inch to 3-inch category. If we get 6 inches, it shuts everything down. Mm-hmm. It even shuts the canine movement down. Usually, that when it snows, the first or second night, it'll shut it down, and then you'll start seeing them come out and about. They'll get to moving around. But we get deep snow, it just shuts them down. But when it comes to weather, ours is typically rain, which can be an absolute nightmare for people. But I tell people, when it comes into the fall of the year, the winter time, if you really want to get the coyotes to moving out, at the beginning of the season, we get the cooler weather. That's going to get them moving initially. But once it gets cold and we've got every day is about the same temperature, you're getting into that weather pattern where for us it's high 50s during the day, mid 50s during the day, and it might be upper 20s or low 30s at night. That's typically a winter weather pattern for us. But what happens is you get into that stale everyday same temperature. You know, it's not 65 degrees one day and all of a sudden it drops down to 40. It's not those type of temperature. It's just a steady, consistent temperature. Weather, the rain fronts coming in typically drive the movement. People don't realize, but if they go back and look at movement, if they document their catch rate versus how many traps they got out, so it gives an accurate percentage, and check your movement. When do you catch the most animals? It's typically right before a rain front. Ours is about 36 hours ahead of a rain front, and then right after a rain front. Well, guess what? If you're out there trapping, and I won't get into that right now, but because it gets into like your different type sets that you use, whether you're using wax dirt or peat moss or whatever it may be, you got to keep those sets working because your best movement is going to be right before a weather front and right after a weather front. I actually look forward to weather. I'm like, oh man, it's going to rain again. And yes. Why do you say that? I said, well, it's been a slow 2-3 days right before this rain. I'm going to see a huge uptick in catch. You know, the animals are going to get to moving. When it comes to wind direction, you know, a lot of people, some people don't care about wind direction. They say, oh, it swirls every which way. But for us, 60% of the time, if you look at a calendar, it's going to be from the northwest, somewhere between west and north. So somewhere in that quarter of the pie is going to be your wind direction. So I typically make a lot of my sets on a northwest wind direction so I can you know, I might set on the northwest side of a path or travelway or field edge or bottom or, you know, whatever it may be. And that's because the movement is best right before a front. Well, guess what? Right before a front, all our fronts come in from the northwest. So if you're set up for a northwest wind and your best movement is going to happen during the northwest, right before the front, and it's going to be a northwest wind, you've covered all your basics. Same way with right after a front. A lot of times that front passes on through in that first 24 hours. That weather pattern is still the same. The wind direction is still a northwest wind as it's blowing through. You still have that right after the rain or snow or whatever, sleet, whatever you got, or drop in temperature. But typically with a drop in temperature for us comes a little bit of rain within it. So weather patterns can really change it. Weather patterns actually can change the dispersal, going back to what we just talked about. Mm-hmm. As you start seeing, you go from dry in August and September, and all of a sudden you start getting rain coming in October and then more rain coming in November. It kind of triggers these animals to start moving around. You know, rain will help with that, right? Weather starts knocking leaves off of trees, winds blowing, things like that. So weather plays a huge factor in canine movement just because they're like us. I know it's probably not the same where you're at, but if you ask anybody in the South, if they call for snow and you think about the grocery store, they call for snow, and the day before they call in for the snow, the grocery store is going to be empty of milk and bread.
Right.
It's going to be a madhouse at the grocery store. Everybody's going to get food. It's no different with coyotes and canines. Right before a front comes through, they know it's a front. They don't know what it's going to be. They don't have a weatherman telling them. So the first thing they do is they get out on their feet. They go to hunting. They're trying to fill their belly because they know they might have to hunker down during that weather system. And they want to go ahead and be full before that comes through.
Yeah, I think the most important thing you said was there is to keep it working on the backside of that as well. I mean, I know with the snow and stuff here in Iowa, it's for us, it's always, you know, right after is the better movement than the before. But, you know, we're dealing with snow usually, 2-3 yeah. 4 inches of snow. But
And snow covering that stuff up can really make a difference. You know, that it kills a lot of stuff. I mean, around here, we can get a cold front come through, and it can be, you know, upper 20s is cold for us at night, and it could be upper 20s one night. And then 3 nights later, it could be in the mid-40s or right around 50 at night, and you'll hear frogs chirping, you know, in the middle of the wintertime. So it's not uncommon to see that. So it's not like the things that the coyotes and the foxes are eating actually disappear all winter like they would if we had a lot of snow like you guys get. So ours, they know they're not. Basically, the coyotes have become accustomed to, we're not going to be shut down for food for a month at a time. You know, if they thought that was going to happen, then you'd start seeing them really get out right after the front and go to try to find something. But coyotes around here know that in a couple of days, everything's going to be back out. I'll be good to go again. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely a location type dependence there, you know, based on what you got. But and having them working after a set, I mean, around here before the front, after the front. If you don't have sets that are working after the front goes through, you've eliminated 50% of your chances to catch animals. If the set's not working, you got to have something that's working through it. You know, I run a lot of flat sets. A lot of people run pipe sets, T-bones, whatever it may be, whatever you like to use, but definitely need to set it up where you can work through the weather system, because that is going to be a great time to target a lot of canines, because I actually talked about this in a demo back in the, I can't remember which one it was, but if you keep a daily chart of your catch rates, and I actually had one that went like, just say for instance, we're going to go Sunday to Saturday on this chart, my catch rate, and this is canine. So like Sunday was one canine, Monday, one canine, Tuesday, two canines, Wednesday, one canine. Well, Friday, the front was coming through. Thursday, it went, you know, 1-1, 2-1, 11.
11.
You know, Thursday jumps up to 11. You know, Friday goes down to 1, Saturday goes up to 6. And then we're back down into 1-2-3s. You know, so that that one movement produced 10 times as many animals as, and that's a extremely exaggerated, it's a rare occurrence. It don't always happen like that, but I actually had a day like that 2 years ago where, you know, it was later in the season. I think it was in January, late January, around the 20th or something. And, you know, they're going into breeding phase. I didn't have a ton of traps out, but I had some out, probably 60 or 70 traps out. And I mean, it was just, you kind of picking them here and there, you know, ones and twos and threes each day on coyotes, and then all of a sudden you have a day with 11. It's like, wow. And that just shows you the importance. If you didn't set up for that weather front, or you wasn't prepared for that weather front, you know, the day before and the day after I caught 17 canines. Mm-hmm. The rest of the week I caught 5 or 6 or whatever it was. You know, just setting up for those weather fronts, knowing when they're going to happen, trying to be prepared for them is huge when it comes to trying to catch a lot of numbers.
Right. And I think you made a good point there where, you know, mentally you have to stay in the game mentally. I mean, it's hard to go out and check empty traps or just have the one for several days, but with the hope of the weather and just watching and staying mentally tough. You know, it's hard when you catch one and then your trap is fired or it doesn't look right. You know, it's hard to keep going back and keeping it all working, but.
Oh, yeah, and y'all seen that firsthand experience with me when you were down. You know, we were fighting the end of September going into October. And just the hot weather, you know, we had hot days. It was dry, and I'm sitting here looking at a front, and I'm telling y'all, well, the day was slow, should pick up, and then we'd see an uptick here and there, and then it could be back, go back slow again, and just you know, you tell yourself all kinds of stuff when you're riding around in that truck, especially if you're by yourself. If you're with other people, you know, you can kind of bounce ideas off of each other. But when you're in that truck by yourself and you're not catching anything and you're trying to figure this thing out, it can get you can get mentally stirred up on yourself. You can start second guessing everything you're doing. Just wait it out. Just wait through the weather system. Wait till the weather changes just to see. And if it picks up when the weather changes, then you know it's the weather. It's not you. It's not something you've done. It's not a bait that you're using. It's not some special urine that you're using or sour urine. It's not a wind direction. It's just weather. Animals move on weather. Mm-hmm. You know, anybody that's got a dog or, you know, cat or something like that that's outside, you'll see them start picking up when it's hot in the summertime. They don't eat a lot. When it starts getting wintertime, they start putting on this fat and things like that. You'll start seeing them eating a lot more. So if you hadn't got cold where you're at or if it's super dry where you're at, just wait till the weather changes. Mm-hmm. Follow those weather patterns, look for them, and use them to your advantage. Like I said, the ideal thing would be if I wanted to set all new farms, if I was a weekend warrior, and what I would do when I was working at the hardware store, I'd have to run traps during the week before work. So I would spend Saturday and Sunday moving my line. I always move my line on Saturday, Sunday, pulled line, move to a new spot. And then what I would do is I'd check my traps Saturday that I've had all week. And then I'd go out there and I'd set a ton more that afternoon on new farms because I knew I had the extra time to check them on Sunday. Then I'd go back Sunday and pull the old line, check the new line, and then add some more to the new line for the following week. So the ideal thing would be is let me have great weather on Saturday, Sunday. And then give me a rain front on like Tuesday or Wednesday.
Right.
That would be the ideal thing. You know, get everything set, have your weather come through, catch what you can catch, and then move on.
Yeah. I mean, hats off to the people that, you know, work full time and try to run a line. I mean, that's a lot of work. I remember those days too.
Yeah. I talk to people a lot of times, you know, they they're up checking or they're setting on a weekend, or some people only have, you know, 3 days on a weekend to set, and it's hard. You know, you get 3 days on a weekend and you don't have a weather front coming through, sometimes it can be difficult. Or that weather front comes through while you're trying to set traps on a weekend, so that makes it even tougher on that part. You know, you can't wait for that couple of dry days to remake sets and fix everything and get ready for the next weather event. But weather is a great tool to have on your side if you can utilize it. And then, you know, some guys, I get to do it for a living. And there's some, you know, there's some extra stress when it comes to that and trying to prepare. And if you don't get that weather, you're sitting here looking at the weatherman and trying to dream up a weather front or something like that to get some movement. You're out here throwing snakes on fences and tree limbs and stuff and doing the rain dance and everything else, trying to get it to happen because you got to make that paycheck. But yeah, it's two ends of the spectrum. You know, full-time trappers learn to rush through it. And then the weekend guys, man, I feel for them, especially if they get a bad weather weekend, because a lot of times they just kills their whole weekend. They just have to start over again next week.
All right, so going into our third topic for tonight, the moon phase. We're just going through a moon phase, so I thought I'd ask your opinion on how the moon phase affects the trap line.
I've seen this question a lot lately, especially with the beaver moon, the bright moon. We hadn't had any cloud cover, so it's been extremely bright. Matter of fact, if you walk outside anytime during the night or in the morning, and if you got a newer telephone and you go to take a picture, it'll suck all that light in and you'll think it's daylight outside. You can take pictures of stuff standing in fields and it could be 4 o'clock in the morning. So it's a super bright moon. And Facebook has been littered with this question the last few days, is how does it affect your catch rate? Do animals travel? Do animals feed? Different things like that. And I tell, when people ask, I don't get into that debate on there, but when people ask me a direct question about it, I tell them, I said, the animal still has to eat. It still has to hunt. And, you know, all the things still happen. Just because the moon gets bright outside, you don't stop eating. Mm-hmm. You know, so they still have to do that. But you got to think about the habits of the animal. You know, coyotes use their nose. They hunt with their nose. They trust their nose. Their nose is their lifeline. That is number one. Their eyesight is secondary. Their eyesight confuses them a lot. So they are all about their nose. When it comes to like bobcats, they use their nose, but they're all about their eyesight. You know, eyesight is number one thing to them. So typically, with me, when I've done my charts and you look at moon phases and catch rates and things like that, I see a decline in my typical sets, my field edge sets, my path sets, my open area sets for coyotes. I see a decline in my catch when that happens. Now, we're not talking about fox. We're not talking about bobcats. We're talking about coyotes. Mm-hmm. You typically see a decline in your catch, and it has more to do with the area in which you set, not because the animal is just not feeding or hungry. He's still hungry. He's still feeding. But if you think about it, a coyote likes to hunt. If he's walking around in a wide-open 200-acre field in the all the crop has been cut, the grass has been cut, there's nothing out there for him to hide in, he stands out like a sore thumb when I've got a bright moon. Everything in that field knows he's there. He can't sneak up on anything. So the coyotes are typically hunting the thicker cover. You can boil this down and get as deep as you want to into this. You know, moon phase is going to last 4 or 5 days and it's going to go back the other way. You know, so if you can deal with it for a couple of days and let it reset, then you're fine. But if you really want to get into your catch rates with coyotes, you know, you can go to fields or paths that have tall trees beside it and look at where the moon rises and sets. And try to, just like your sunset, you know, you got shadows on trees. Well, at night with the moon, you'll have shadows on trees going certain directions. Maybe set up certain places where the shadows will be of the trees, or the cover will be over your traps. Or that travel way will be shaded. Or maybe go into bigger wooded areas or thicker cover and set traps, the cutovers, things like that. Because you'll see a steady catch rate on coyotes in those darker areas. Now, when it comes to cats, old cats on a bright night, they can see everywhere. You know, they're hunting with their eyes, not their nose. And they can look across that 500-acre field and see that flagging you got up at the top of, or the feathers, or whatever you may have used to attract that bobcat. They can see that way up there, and then they'll take a beeline and go straight to it. You know, they don't have any fear at all. Mm-hmm. So you know, typically your cat catch will increase, because not only do you have flag, some people might set flagging and stuff in thick areas, so those are still going to work no different than if it was completely dark outside. The cat's still going to see it, but you also have the added visibility in the longer visibility in open fields and stuff like that, because you have the extra, the moonlight and the illumination at night, so they can see a lot further. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, nothing. Go ahead.
Okay. When it comes to flocks, I think it's a little bit of both. I don't think you see a whole lot of difference with the flocks, because a lot of times people that are trapping flocks are setting pinch points and travel ways. It might be right up against some thick stuff or whatever. I don't think the fox cares as much when it comes to his eyesight. Things don't confuse him. A coyote, he smells something. If he can't see it, he's fine. He's not on alert. He smells it. He's going to go try to find it. He's going to go back and forth. He's going to put his nose on it. He's going to try to taste it. Then he's going to try, if it's in a hole or under something, he's going to try to get it out, smell it again before he either rolls on it or eats it or whatever he's going to do with it. If you throw an added T-bone or a anything there, pipe sticking out of the ground or whatever you want to use, that they see that, and they see it really good in the bright light. So they may be weary about it. So I've had a lot of times where coyotes on cameras on a bright moon, they'll typically stand back 4 or 5 feet and try to figure this thing out. They don't rush right up to it. They're kind of confused, and a lot of times you'll just see them walk off. Whereas a fox doesn't tend to, on camera, it's like, they're almost like a cat. They don't really care about seeing it. You know, it doesn't confuse them. It doesn't give them the skittish nature like the coyote has. And of course, same way with the bobcat. Whereas foxes, I guess they just hunt more with their eyes and their nose versus a coyote, which is typically his nose.
Right.
So go ahead.
I was just going to say, I mean, that was a lot of great tips for people too, because I know, like, sometimes you get your line out and it's going great, and then the moon happens, and then everything is completely flipped upside down.
Oh yeah, yeah, and just to give an instance for me, from my experience this week, our beaver moon happened. Today's Thursday, so our beaver moon happened Wednesday morning, which was the brightest full moon, whatever you want to call it, at 8 o'clock yesterday morning. So Sunday going into it, I caught 5 canines, I believe it was, on Sunday. Monday I didn't catch anything. Tuesday I didn't catch anything. Wednesday I didn't catch anything. I went 3 days in a row consecutive with no canine catches. So then I got to thinking, I need to start setting stuff that are in more shaded areas to the moonlight, not sunlight, but moonlight. Mm-hmm. So I went in Wednesday and I started tweaking some stuff, and I set 20 new traps yesterday on similar places that I'm already setting, and I set them up with the shadows in mind and things like that for the moon at night. And then today I had 6 canines, so I went 5-0-0-0-6, and I think that was a direct correlation to the moon.
Mm-hmm.
The brightness of the moon, the shadows of the moon, all of them things that are happening. Once I set in those areas, now 3, 4, 5 days from now, it probably won't make a hill of beans.
Mm-hmm.
Because I believe the moon comes up about 1 hour and 5 minutes later each night. So if it was that full moon was rising over the trees at, you know, 5:30 this afternoon, tomorrow it'll be 6:30, then it'll be 7:30, then it'll be 8:30, and it'll be a lesser moon each night. And if 5 days from now, the moon won't even come up over the horizon out of the east, it won't pop up until, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning. So you got all that night, that that moon isn't out there. So it only takes a few days, and it'll be all be right in the world again, and nobody will be talking about the full moon again, and how nothing moves and how nothing eats during a full moon, because all of those things happen. They change their travel patterns. It's no different than if you're a deer hunter and you mess up a buck and he gets weary of something and he just changes his travel pattern. Coyotes do the same thing. Fox do the same thing. Bobcats do the same thing. When they use that moon to their advantage, you got to remember they're out there on four legs. They don't have a grocery store. They have to go and you know, kill their food and eat it. So if they can get in the darkness of the woods and they can hunt in the darkness, it's a benefit to them. They can catch more animals. And the same way with rabbits, you know, they don't like to get out in that bright sunlight. Deer a lot of times don't like to, moonlight. Deer don't like to get out in that bright moonlight. A lot of times on a full moon night, you'll see deer movement actually happen at 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning because they lay up all night. Thinking that it's too bright. So they'll get up at 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning, or they'll get on their feet early in the afternoon, 3 or 4 o'clock. Coyotes are the same way. You can see them traveling a lot during late morning hours during a bright moon phase, or you'll travel in that thicker cover during that bright moon phase. But they're still eating. They're still traveling. I can promise they didn't just hop up on the couch and say, you know what, it's a bright moon tonight, I think I'm going to sit on the couch and watch a little TV. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not happening. They're still out there moving. They're still out there feeding. You know, I've experienced a lot of different coyotes and activity and watching them and different things like that. And it all happens the same. It just happens in a different spot. Mm-hmm. And if you can move those areas and trap those thicker areas just to get you by for those few days and make you a few catches during that time frame, then use the moon to your advantage on that point. And sometimes, you know, I put a post up the other day. It says you got to learn to adapt throughout a season, and you got to overcome obstacles. You know, all three of the things that we mentioned, whether it be dispersal, whether it be weather fronts, or whether it be the moon phase, all of those are obstacles throughout a season that every trapper, if you're trapping throughout a season, will have to deal with at some point. Mm-hmm. Make the best of it. Scratch your head a little bit. That's why I don't have any hair left on my head, because I scratch it all the time trying to figure out what's going on. But it can be a blessing. It can be a curse all at the same time. But once you learn how to adapt and what's happening, learn the animal and what's happening on that part of it, then you can better go out and catch them, figure them out.
Well, I think you summed it up pretty good. I know that's something that I need to do better is, you know, writing things down and, like you said, just journaling and taking note of what's going on your trap line and using it to your advantage and learning from it. So,
yeah, a lot of that stuff you don't have. I'm not telling everybody to get out there and write a book and say, you know, this day, this was the well time, and this was the moon phase at this time, and this was the barometric pressure and the dew point. I mean, if you want to do all that, that's fine. Mm-hmm. But I typically keep a journal of everyday catch. You know, I've got what I catch each day throughout a season. Then I can go back. The good thing about Google is you can go back and you can look up that date. You know, once you put it on a piece of paper and you see a pattern, you're like, well, I had 3 days in a row right here, or 2 days in a row right here that were really good. Mm-hmm. Let me check and see what kind of weather pattern we were in, what the moon phase was in. Let me see those things that happened on that date. So you can go back and pull that stuff up through Google from the past. And you can do the same with bad days. You know, everybody has good days. Everybody has bad days. You can pull up those bad days and say, okay, let me see what's going on that day. And a lot of times if you pull up the weather, as far as the temperature, the weather condition, whether it was raining or right before rain or whatever it may be, and the moon phase, you pull up those three things to go with it, you'll see a complete difference in all of those on those two dates. Mm-hmm. You know, the day you caught good versus the day you caught bad, you'll see a difference in them. You'll see more resemblance in the day. All, if you look up all the days that you did well, you'll see more resemblance in those weather pattern, or it was right before weather pattern, or it was a cool day and a sandwiched between some warmer days, or it was no moon out. Now all my sets, you know, if 30% of my sets were in the bushes because of bright moon, and 70% of my sets were out in the open field and we didn't have a bright moon, or it was cloudy and the moon wasn't out, now all of a sudden all my sets have an equal shot at catching versus the 30% that might have been in the bushes on a bright moon. They have a better percentage to catch than the ones out in the field. So, you know, you go back and look at those things and pull history up and data and stuff like that, and it shows a pattern. And those patterns don't come with I set 10 traps today and I pulled them in 2 days, and then I waited a month and I set 10 more traps. And it's hard to get a pattern like that. Mm-hmm. But if you're trapping, if you got some traps in the ground and you're running them, or cameras, even if you don't have any traps in the ground, you got traps on the weekend and you run cameras all week on those sets that you've already tripped to see what the action is like at the set, to kind of survey your population of animals, you can use those to your advantage and see which days are that you have more movement and things like that. So you can see those patterns. You can write it down and you can see that pattern as it goes. I know trapping 7 months out of the year for canines, for me, on a full wide open scale really will tell you a lot, because you're basically running through three different seasons. Mm-hmm. And you can see those pattern movements and moon phases and dispersal and the weather. You can see it all. Everything we talked about today, you can see those in a chart or on your data and tell when it happens and learn why it doesn't happen or why it does happen.
All right. Well, I think we covered quite a bit tonight, and I thank you for taking the time to do this with me. And if you guys are out here listening and have questions for us, feel free to send either one of us, Tommy, myself, Jeff, a message on social media or email or comment on the podcast with your questions, and we can get them answered. And
I get a lot of questions that people send me. And they want a direct response to it. I'd love to possibly use those for future shows or future questions, even if it's interviewing somebody else at some point. You know, you pop a question up on them and say, hey, this is what somebody asked about. So if you've got any questions out there, definitely send them in. There's no dumb question. The only dumb question is one that's not asked.
That's right.
And, you know, ask questions. I see it on Facebook, the same questions over and over. And a lot of people get tired of answering the same questions, but I don't. I answer it a lot, because there's a lot of people that didn't see it, or there's a lot of people that didn't understand it, or the way it was answered, they didn't understand it. Or you don't ever know a lot of times what you get on Facebook, whether it's a sarcastic answer or whether it's a real answer. So a lot of people are still left holding the bag on that side. But yeah, ask those questions. If we get a chance, we'll go through them on one of the trapping radios. I'm going to be interviewing some other people, some legends per se of the industry. And if you've got somebody out there that you think would be a good interview, let us know that as well, because we'd love to try to get with them and get an interview, get something down, especially with the older generation passing on and not able to do it anymore. They got some awesome stories to tell, and I love to sit down and hear them. So if you've got somebody out there that you want to hear something from, or that's got some stories that you know everybody would love, just shoot us a name and we'll try to reach out to them.
Yep, for sure. All right, well, I think that's a good time to wrap it up, and we'll see everybody next week.
All right, thank you.